Blog Talk Radio.
Be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports In Depth.
SID, midday, before afternoon, and before night. Once again, where you get it first and right. Midday. And midday. Late night. Any time of the day. When Sports Is Ever started, we do it right. We bow our heads. We get on our knees. We give honor and praise. And to God, we give all the glory to Him. Is our goal to please. John Coltrane leads us in his iconic Dear Lord as we take off our hats, we close our eyes, we get on our knees. It's now to pay homage to the one and only true God. A prayer, once again, opens up. Coltrane leads us in prayer. Miles Davis plays us in to Coltrane. He discovered Miles Coltrane. Discovered John Coltrane. But hey, here we go. It's prayer time. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for the things we so largely take for granted. And more importantly, dear Lord, we thank you for blessings that have come. Will come all unmerited. We thank you for your grace and your mercy. Mercy is not getting what you do deserve, and grace is getting what you don't. We thank you, dear Lord. And we ask you, as my mother say, if you find anything like sin in our heart, cast it in the sea of forgiveness. It'll never rise up against us on judgment day. We thank you, Lord, that you also said that we're clothed in our right mind. And Reverend Alton said one time that we're on above ground, once again, on this side of the dirt. You know what we want, we know what you need, what we need. So it's you, dear Lord, that we come to and that we flee. We ask you, blessed all the blessings, maybe your darling son, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
And if I may say that the sports in-depth nation is here. The sports in-depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Sanders. Take it away, good doctor.
Sports in depth midday, before afternoon and before night. Once again, where you get it first and you get it right. Boxing will be at the hallmark of this show. We'll have a little segment with the boxing way with Lady A live from the world of Astoria. Boxing is big time. Oscar De La Hoya, the golden boy, one of the truly great fighters of his time and all time. It's a fight that the boxing fans want. Bernard, the alien. D-Hop Hopkins against the Russian Kovalev, the Prussian. It's November 8th, Atlantic City, where it all started for the iconic Bernard Hopkins. But that's not the only fight that are happening. There's talk that the Andy Lee Miguel Cotto fight is not to be, but there will be some sort of fight for Cotto as we move toward now the fall. I want the month. Jump Shot Jonesy will be here with us, and we talk the small sweet spider and the sweet jump shot. Also, Oscar De La Hoya says that there's no border fights on the horizon for Alvarez, so it may not be. It could quite well be. Joshua Platt. One thing will be, though, Oscar says that he's come back to HBO. They will bring the fight at the boxing dance floor. And what do they want? He says they could get. Hey, listen to this. And he got to see him, Manny Pacquiao. He even mentioned Pacquiao with Mayweather. Incidentally, the number one pound-for-pound box in the sport today. Fight next Saturday. There'll be him and Mayadonna too. And once again, there should be victory once again for Floyd. Pretty boy Mayweather, Andrew Broner, is fighting on a card that fights Matusse. Yes, the hard punching Matusse. And there's a fight out on the Midwest where not only is the Nigerian warrior back, but the Matador. So, it's all happening here. But right now, it's FIT midday, where you get it before the noon and before night, once again, first and right. Let's go back. Let's relax. Let's interview some. I'm Jones here first. Sports and Death, Block Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Trump Shot doing a little midday move here, midday night, where you get it before afternoon, night, and right. Real quickly, John Chop, what's happening in the world of the sweet science? The American basketball team is doing quite well, which is sort of expected, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're handling their business, and, you know, they look good out there, you know, against the opponents. And, you know, two players in particular who have really stand out, Anthony Davis with the New Orleans Pelicans, and Kenneth the Manimal Fareed local product from Jersey. He's really brought energy and excitement, you know, to the team. So, you know, they're really on, you know, they're on par to win this gold medal.
Jump shot on a show I did, SID Light, where you get the last first and right. Got a call from Boston, and there was some, this particular fan had some hankerings, felt that Rondo was going to eventually be traded or was a, right now, a negative vibe. Energy-wise on that team, Rondo's been one of the lead players at the position. In fact, I think there's one time, well, question even with Garnett and Pierce, he was seen to be the key guy on there, and we can see they weren't able to elevate to a higher level in the playoffs without him. Your thoughts on Rondo? You think Boston's going to move him? He's been inundated with injuries as of late. I think that's taken a toll on him. Can he return to the level of play, one, that he was that two, you think is Boston trying to trade him? At three, a guy like him with that young team, I think could be a positive influence as opposed to this talk about him being a negative one. Is, we'll go from three, is he a negative influence on the Boston Celtics?
I don't know, Doc, if it's so much that he's a negative influence as opposed to what he's seen around him that has really – that really hasn't been positive. You got to remember, when this guy came into the league, when he started with Boston, I mean, he has watched over the last 3 or 4 years 3 to 4 potential future Hall of Famers leave the roster. And they're basically in a rebuilding mode with the guy. He's getting older. He's been top-notch at that position for a while. And now, look at the talent that he's surrounded with. So, you know, I think with how he probably sees it, you know, obviously I haven't had a conversation with him, but how he sees it, when every year you're watching a Paul Pierce come off your roster, a Kevin Garnett come off your roster, a Ray Allen come off your roster, you're not going to the finals anymore, you know, and his first 3 or 4 years with the team, the worst case scenario was conference finals. And now they're basically a lottery team. So, no, he's a competitor. You know, he's feisty, and he can't be happy. So I don't know if it's so much negative or it's just that now a lot more is on his shoulders. When he was Mr. Triple-Double and getting those assists and those steals, he had people to hit. You had Ray Allen out on the three-point line. You have Kevin Garnett down in the post. You have Paul Pierce. You know, this is a, that was a championship team. So I think eventually his days there will probably be numbered because at some point they're just going to cut it and say, look, we're in a rebuilding mode and we got to get a point guard to come in here. Rondo's moving closer to 30 now. I mean, he's probably like 27, 28, but he is moving toward 30. So, and he has a lot of wear and tear also. So that's my thought.
Hmm. Answering two of the three questions, that's my next question too, was Boston, I guess you say, will probably be looking to move him. One of the things we talked about was that with this negative input, which is always part of how you put on American players, there would be this reluctance to get him. But on the other hand, the question, still a young player, you talk about he has some wear and tear. Can he elevate again to the position that he was considered by many to be the number one point guard in basketball? Can he overcome the injuries as a younger player, can overcome certain things physically than older players? Can Rondo be the Rondo of old once again?
That remains to be seen. That's a very good question. You know, he has a lot of mileage on him. He's not an old player, old in terms of age. He's just an older player in terms of mileage, but maybe a new situation. You know, he comes in and he rededicates himself, and he has different players around him. You know, I think someone like Rondo, I believe, could probably help the Knicks. Could probably help the Nets. You know, but that's probably just my New York bias, so, you know, speaking. But, you know, this is a guy who can he steals. He plays the passing lanes well. He gets steals. You know, he's not a great outside shooter, but he makes the players around him better. So, you know, I think he's still, you know, a very effective player, and especially in the Eastern Conference, why not?
No, jump shot, you're talking about making players better. LeBron James is unquestionably, undoubtedly, the best player in the game. They're one of the greatest all-around players in the game. They got love in Cleveland. They got to love that. I mean, that, I think right there, the hoopster somehow thinks maybe a little differently, that he still don't see them beating the team to beat, but we haven't talked to him since this acquisition of love. But with the acquisition of love, is Cleveland now the team to beat? Not only in that division, but over in the East?
I would say so. I would say they have to be the favorites, you know, in the Eastern Conference. But it's not by, you know, it just makes everybody else, you know, they're not odds on. Like, if he's in Miami with the big three plus Ray Allen, they're odds on. But now he's with Cleveland and Kevin Love. I mean, Miami is still a formidable team. The Washington Wizards are a formidable team. So now what it does, Doc, it opens up the Eastern Conference. You know, they may be one. Oh, my goodness, how can I not mention the Chicago Bulls? So now the Eastern Conference has really opened up where they could be the number one team, but the other teams that are in the conference are not far behind them. So no one is odds on. Whereas, obviously, if LeBron had stayed in Miami with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, you know, they were pretty much odds on. Even though Indiana was the number one seed last year, the number one team, as it turned out, was Miami. And they pretty much, I mean, you saw what they did in the playoffs. You know, they ran the gamut in terms of sweeping the first round, losing one game in the second round, losing two games in the conference finals, you know, until they got to the finals.
Yeah. Actually, I still have a problem with the air conditioning situation in San Antonio. I just don't understand how a game of that magnitude, the game of games, NBA champion, first NBA game of the NBA championship, and you have that sort of problem with the air conditioning in the 21st century. There's no excuse for that. I think it should have been, and I understand these things happen. Once again, it should have been handled differently. You either fix this or you will lose this game or we will play this game on another time. And this is the thing, the late great sports writer Dick Young, and as a sports writer, yeah, great person, a great writer to a degree in New York City, no question, the first person. But I remember Dick talked about, after watching the 1965 NFL championship game, the Green Bay Packers, the great Green Bay Packers against the Cleveland Browns, the greatest football player of all time, Jim Brown, and the great football team there, coached by Blanton Collier. Everybody talks about Paul Brown, and they talk about Vince Lombardi. George Allen, nobody talks about Blanton Collier, great coach there for Cleveland, coming in after, too, the great Paul Brown. And I remember they played on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And Young wrote about, hey, this is crazy. This is a championship game. This is the game where you want the best players to be at their best. We have to put them in an environment where they can perform at their best. And he said, it is ludicrous that the runner-up team, the two second-best teams, are playing down in Florida and great weather. This is crazy. In fact, I think the 2 years prior to that it happened, the Browns and the Packers played in Miami with the runner-up bowl. And he said, hey, you know, we have to put the best in the best position and in the best conditions, because that's what you want to see as fans, and that's what you want the players to be at their best. And this is my situation with that first game played at San Antonio with the air conditioning going out, and it did show that it affected LeBron James. It did show that it had an effect on the outcome of the game. It affected the best player in the game. It affected the best player on his team. It affected the best player on the court that day. And I think not enough was said about that. Had that been Michael Jordan, believe me, there'd have been some uproar about that whole thing. And I just thought that, one, if the conditions weren't suitable, and everybody, and I don't want to hear that, well, they both played in there, they both played in condition, but it's a big difference. There's a big difference in a polar bear swimming in the freezing water in the Arctic and a deer. So I just thought that, one, they should have said, okay, we're going to not play this game until this thing is rectified, or two, If you can't rectify it, then guess what? You just forfeited the first game of the NBA Finals. And I just thought that weird. There should have been some things that happened to an NFL, the Elway owner of the Baltimore Colts, $500,000 fine, a 6-game suspension. Surprise here. That's 5D midday, before afternoon, before night, where you want you to get it first, last, and right. And Wes Welker, a little problem there. He's going to be suspended for a couple of games. Because four games exactly with that substance abuse rule here in the NFL. A little surprised to see Welker, but that's happened. It's Michael Sam. Seems like he's going to get a chance on the practice squad with the Dallas Cowboys. Amazing figure last night, giving out former coach of the New York Jets, the first African-American coach of the Jets. You know who I'm talking about, don't you, Jonesy?
Jonesy, I'm right here.
Yeah.
The former
African American coach of the Jets.
No,
Herb Williams.
Oh, you said Herb Edwards.
Herb Edwards, first African American coach of the Jets.
Of course, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Herb. And Herb said something that was so profound. He said, everybody's talking about Michael Sam getting cut. He said, over 700 guys got cut. Over 700 guys. So you got 700 guys fighting for a position on the taxi squad. It seems that the Dallas Cowboys, how about them Cowboys? I remember, and I also redundantly always see Mr. Calvin Hill, and I've heard so much about what a great, great organization that the Dallas Cowboys are. And once again, Jerry Jones, the foremost, most flamboyant owner in pro football, one of the most flamboyant and renowned owners in sports throughout America and the world. Wish he'd get back into a little boxing, him and DK get some boxing things going. But it seems that JJ is just looking at a guy that can help the Cowboys. How much in reality, Doc Stanley, SID midday, before afternoon, before night, once again, where you get it first, last, and right.
Yeah.
How much of Sam?
I'm going to
yes, John.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, Doc. I'm sorry.
Yeah. How much of Sam's not making the Rams, being cut, is him being a gay player? Or do you feel that had no bearing whatsoever?
Doc, I like to think it had no bearing whatsoever, because at the end of the day, these coaches got to win football games. Their livelihood is on the line.
I just want to stop you there. That says a lot. That says what you're saying. I want you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, when you hear my panel here, these are the best there is at whatever they do and what they do here too. And Jonesy, you're interjecting something that says a lot about, well, your mindset and NFL, and that is a tremendous, tremendous statement of acknowledgement and admiration in the fact that, hey, it's about winning, and that's for you to interject that into this conversation, I think says a lot about the mindset of the people, not only in sports but in America. We don't care who you are. You know, it's just about what you can do. And you, tremendous synopsis here, Jones, as you will continue, that, hey, it's about the W's. You know, we don't care what you do before the game. We don't care what you do after the game. We just want you to do what you can do for us, which is the best for us to win during the game. Go ahead, Jones. Thanks a lot for that intro.
Well, I mean, ask Bo Porter. You know, with a 110 and 190 major league record as a manager, Labor Day came, and he's no longer a laborer for the Houston Astros. It doesn't make a difference, you know, anything else. You know, we can, you know, allude to, well, he's one of three African-American managers. At the end of the day, the Houston Astros said, your record is not one where it's productive for us to keep you on. And he's gone. He's done. And like so many others. So like I said, I like to think that. Of course, there's always underlining, you know, there's always underlining things. But the Rams, who are in a division with San Francisco. Oh, okay. Doc, give me a minute. I'm going to get back to you.
Yeah, Jones, you got to go back in the studio. With that, we're going to go to the, not the video, but we're going to go to some interviews. Lady A will kick it off. Lady A, the boxing way with Lady A, live from the Wall of Astoria. We got a chance to dovetail the last 10 part of an interview with the great boxing writer, probably the greatest boxing writer of his generation, Tim Smith, our good friend, good buddy, and shares the same birthday as my mom's, and talk to the first lady of boxing, has promoted the lovely, intelligent, the iconic Kathy Duva. So we're going to listen into those interviews, moving with the special segment of the Boxing Way with Lady A, live from the Wall of Astoria. Hey, SID Midday, before afternoon, before night, once again, where you get it first, last, and right.
Whatever the fighter wants to do, that we just want it for the fighter.
My mistake. Let's get back to ladies first, Oscar.
Congratulations.
Under the circumstances that developed, not at all. It took outside circumstances to make all that happen, but once everything was in place and you could see how this was playing out, you know, I love it.
Congratulations, First Lady of Boxing. Another big fighter. You always have the ability to bring not only a big fight, but a fight of merit and class.
Well, thank you. I like to think I learned from my husband. He made some pretty big fights. I don't have any fight making in the country. This is why I do this. It's nice to bring a fighter along and put him in, you know, and build him up, and that's all. That's fine. But once a guy gets to that place where, you know, where he wants to test himself against the best, where he's ready to do that, it's no fun for me to go to fights where my guy's expected to win. It's almost like anything less than a knockout is going to be a loss. That's pressure. I don't think this is pressure at all. I think this is fun.
You weren't surprised that Bruno did take this fight?
Under the circumstances, I wasn't at least a bit surprised because clearly he was given a choice between giving up his title and taking this fight. And so he took this fight. Of course he did. He's a great champion. I have all the respect in the world for him. He also can take the long too, as I can. In the end, it's about your legacy. It's not about your one-loss record. He has enhanced his legacy by taking this fight. Whatever the outcome, his name is a bigger man.
And you're talking about legacy. Is yours instead of class and charm. You are the absolute
champion
in this game.
You're going to
put it to the game.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Good to see you as always.
Always. I'd like to tell you something to the first lady of boxing, Ms. Kathy Gibson. Do you have a question for her?
Career, it's pretty much is making it going to be a future fight, and that's it. Well, you have to prove after this.
Yeah, we're here at the press conference for Hopkins, Colorado, First Lady of Boxing, SID, Portland Boxing, June, I called up Jay Blade, said last night, when she gets a chance, we'll stick that question. Jay Blade said that, we heard so much, Adrian, about Cotto and Andy Lee, supposedly that's off the table. We heard so much about Alvarez and Kirkland. I heard now it's Alvarez and Oscar, maybe you can confirm it, it's Alvarez and Cloudy.
Alvarez and Cloudy? That's a shocker to me. Because to me, the fight that I think would have been the next best fight would have been Kirkland. I mean, I'm a little surprised that he turned that fight down. You know, I think that Golden Boy is starting to see some of the kinks in the armor of Alvarez. So it was apparent. It was apparent in the Lara fight, you know, and in the Mayweather fight. He really does not fight boxers that box very well. And, you know, you can see that, and it's a relevant point if you really look at it. So that his style and the way he boxes is not, comparatively speaking, you know, he has problems. So in other words, he can't fight them straight forward and cut the ring off yet. Alvarez still has a lot of qualities that I feel still have to be improved upon. His ring generalship, cutting off the ring, his head movement, his defense. There's still a lot of things that, you know, can be fine. If somebody exploits them and it kinks in the office.
I think you're being kind to Adrian by not going back to the Trout fight. I mean, that he dropped Trout got up and won that round.
Yeah, well, Trout came back. You know, I really still believe in my heart that was a draw, that fight was a draw. You know, back in the day, if you remember, Doc, in order to win, you had to really beat the champion. Nowadays, you know, you don't have the same way of doing, you know, as you did back then.
You got the right name, just show up.
That's it. So, you know, you could go back and that goes back to for years that you could have seen the judges, you know, judging fights like that. But this is going to be an interesting fight. I'm surprised. I told you when I said it on the show that I was really surprised that he took this fight with Kovalev, because I said for the longest time I did not believe that he was going to fight Kovalev. But, you know, Kovalev's the man, and if he's trying to prove what he is and who he is and what, you know, his legacy is all about, this is a good fight for him.
Special segment, the World Off Astoria, the Boxing Wave, Lady A, there's talk that Cotto may be forced to fight Triple G.
Oh, my God. He doesn't want to fight Triple G. He doesn't want to fight Triple G. I don't think that fight's going to happen. Not right now. I don't think so. He could barely make weight. Look at the fight he fought against Martinez. He fought that fight under
160.
So he could barely make 160. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the old Jedi mind trick is always going on in boxing, so we'll wait and see what happens.
Okay, we've got Madonna and Mayweather, too. I'm saying everybody, Mayweather will win this one a lot more convincingly, as he will not try to fight him and box the entire fight. But the bottom line, Lady A, is the last fight, Mayweather won anyway, so what's all the hoopla about?
Well, he won, but I think it's more because I think Madonna pushed the fight early, and just as I said to you before, in order to fight Mayweather, you have to be able to make those ring adjustments. And, you know, if you saw that after a while, you know, Mayweather was adjusting to him pushing the fight, and he needed to make an adjustment in his corner and pull out the victory. In order to beat Mayweather, you have to be out of your A-plus game, because Mayweather knows how to make those adjustments defensive, offensively, you know, to attack you. So you have to be able to make those adjustments in the ring. I also feel like, you know, in cutting off the ring and coming at Mayweather was advantageous to him in the beginning of that fight. But now that Mayweather pretty much has his game, I don't really see Madonna doing too much unless he's able to push the fight. So I'll wait and see what happens.
And let's get a question to Kathy Drupal, what you get about it.
Well, another time.
Okay. Real quickly, Mayweather wins this fight. No question about it. Who's the pick on this fight, though? Hopkins and Covlin.
I think Kovalev's going to pull it off. I mean, you know, I think one of the key things that just that concerns me, though, is what is it that Hopkins saw that he's going to exploit? One of the big things is that Kovalev has not made it past the eighth round in a lot of his fights, and he's been able to knock out guys early. So I think that's going to be a big thing to look at in this fight. You got to realize another thing about Bernard is very elusive. He knows how to move around in the ring, and I'm wondering if that's one of the things he's going to try to use. You know, I was just telling Tim Smith that I think one of the things that you got to look at, too, with Bernard is that, for me personally, I still get flashbacks of the fight with Kelly Pavlik, and I don't think that he's going to take a fight if he didn't see something. So that's just one of the things that concerns me. But overall, I think Kovalev is a powerful puncher. You know, I think he definitely has what it takes to win the fight.
Watching with Lady A Sports and Depth special live from the World of Astoria, SID Late Night, where you get it last, where you get it first, where you get it right. Sad and touching, the situation of Jermaine Taylor shooting his cousin.
Yeah, I heard about that early on this week, but he was uninvited. So what is somebody that's uninvited doing in your house? I mean, it's just the law is on his side. I'll wait and see what happens. I'm just, I don't want to rush the judgment because we don't all know everything that's come out yet. But, you know, early on I heard that he was an uninvited guest. So to me, that's telling me that he came in the house without permission or authority. So Jermaine had the right to do what he had to do. Just like LL Cool J when his house got burglarized and he knocked the hell out of the guy. You know, he knocked him out. So if anybody comes to your house unannounced and, you know, you're uninvited, it is what it is. That's how I look at it. But like I said, I don't want to rush the judgment.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you hear it first. Besides her intellect and beauty, her knowledge of not what's happening in the sweet science, but also, I mean, you're right, he came in first. ID. We mentioned the high school football player, Mike Bellum, his alma mater, first ever African quarterback in high school football, Staten Island. You died after practice last night, and you mentioned it here, too. It's not just Jermaine Taylor shooting his cousin. It's maybe Jermaine Taylor shooting his cousin, Colbert Abandon.
Yeah, I don't know too much about background, so I can't really comment on that. Like I said, it's just when somebody enters authority into somebody's house and unlawfully enters and remains, to me, you know, according to the law, that's a crime. So whether it's his relative or not, you know, I go on his side. But like I said, I don't know all the details, and I guess everything will come out, so I don't really want to comment.
Yeah, well, I heard you made bail. This fight is still happening. We're here at the press conference, special edition, the Boxing Web with Lady A from the World of Astoria, SID Late Night, where you get it last, where the first we get it right, and we'll be doing interviews for the fight here, and thanks for being with us.
Outstanding sports in the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, SID, midday, before afternoon, before night, where you once again get it first late in night. Jumpshot, you back with us? Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to go back and listen to some more interviews from that press conference. Let's move on. It's the Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya.
You know, mending that fence that was sort of torn for so long. How is it to be back with HBO, particularly on a big play like this?
Well, it's just it's an indication, obviously, that Golden Boy is willing to work with anyone who is willing to work with us. That's the bottom line. This fight was basically driven by Hopkins and made by Golden Boy on HBO for the fans. So it really is a great indication that, you know, whatever obstacles we might have in front of us, if we have to make a fight that the fans want to see, then we're going to do it.
When you were approached about going back to, when Bernard approached you about going back to HBO to work this out, I mean, what was your first thought, or what did you think, first of all, the first thought in your head?
Well, my first thought was, you know, how do we break into Showtime. Because we have a good relationship with Showtime. We do a lot of business at Showtime. We've been doing all our major fights at Showtime. I have a great relationship with Steven. Bernard Hopkins is Bernard Hopkins. He's 39 years old and he deserves the very best deal that one can get him. And so I believe that this fight here with Kovalov was a perfect fit for HBO, for Hopkins, for everybody involved. So we're happy to be back.
Did you break the ice for Canelo fighting maybe Miguel Cotto?
Well, look, I think what it is, this fight here is kind of like, you have the Titanic, you know? You have the Titanic, and this broke the ice, you know? It just broke the ice. We still have, there's a little tip of ice on top of the ocean, but you have that huge obstacle, you know, that we still have to break, you know? But this is the start of something. This is the beginning. This is the start of making the fight that the fans want to see. So this was very important for us to do. Yeah, look. You don't see the Yankees versus the Mets every weekend or every month. You don't see the Jets versus the Giants. You know, you don't see them every day. You know, so this event here, yeah, this is the fight that the fans were demanding. The fans wanted to watch, and we came through. Was it easy? No. But it was possible. It was doable. So can we make other fights that the fans are demanding? Absolutely. It's just a matter of breaking the ice, and this is what we did here with this fight. We broke the ice.
Fights are you hearing the fans demanding?
The fights that you're hearing. Yeah. Canelo Cotto, Mayweather Pacquiao. Danny Garcia Pacquiao.
All those
fights. I mean, there's too much at stake. You know, it's like the fans have been paying for a first class ticket sitting in coach, you know? For the last, I don't know how long. It's time the fans get what they deserve. We have options. We're looking at several guys like Kirkland, like Andrade, like Joshua Cotty, like there's different guys that we're looking at, but there's nothing set in stone yet.
He's not
exclusive. He's signed to anybody.
Move him around
Well, I mean, obviously wherever Canelo wants to fight, then that's where we're.
That's a big deal. I mean, that's a big
chess piece. Whatever the fighter wants to do, that we just work for the fighter. That's basically what we do. Thank you, senor.
The Golden Boy, one of the fighters inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Boxing Hall of Fame this year, one of the great fighters of his era, I think one of the greatest fighters of all time, and Oscar De La Hoya. More importantly, did you hear what Oscar said? You know, we're doing what's best for the fighter, for the public. And Oscar, people forget, and let's forget all about the cocaine. And, they act like Oscar's the only guy ever did cocaine. You know, the only guy that ever dressed up. You know, let's forget that. Let's forget that the guy was a great fighter. And also, Golden Boy. Golden Boy was founded on the premise of two things, okay? Two things. Bringing the best fights to the public and finding jobs for fighters who retired. Let's not forget, Mark Barrera gave him a job. Hopkins gave him a job. Sugar Shane Mosley, a job. They had a place to go to after boxing, okay? Oscar didn't have to do that. Oscar's not rich. Oscar's filthy rich. Okay? Oscar, service to others is rent you pay for your space here on Earth. Okay? Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Oscar. Oscar. Oscar told me, you know, if he could still fight, he loves fighting. He would not have retired if he not get it. Let's not forget this. Oscar was in that fight and at a point beating Mayweather in the fight that they had until his left shoulder went out on him. You know, people never talk about that. Oscar won the fight against Trinidad, beat Trinidad, beat him. Then they had the audacity to come back with this nonsense about Chicken Delahoy. They didn't say that, okay? When Billy Conn got knocked out by Joe Lewis, what'd they say? They said, Dag, stupid, what'd you do? What'd you do when they fight them? You had to fight one. But then they're going to go, Oscar, Chicken Delahoya? Because he uses, it's an amazing thing in sports, you know, when a minority is cerebral, there's something wrong with him. You know, black athletes just run faster, jump higher, hit harder. They don't think. Okay? Like Willie Mays, who would come to the plate and take an outside curveball on the corner for a strike three, and then when you threw him that same pitch 2 innings later, it was out of the ballpark. Walt Clyde Frazier, who would see the flaw in your dribble and not steal the ball from you now in the second quarter, but now the game's on the line, and whoop, there he goes. There he goes. Michael Jordan, who did redundantly things in practice, so when it came game time, bam, there it was. Huh? Amazing. God is first. My friends and family is second. I am third. SID midday. Before afternoon and before night. Once again, where you get it first, last, and right. Your Jump Shot, you back in the studio?
I'm here. Yep.
Okay, Jump Shot.
I'm here with you.
Just some things there. Oscar De La Hoya is. And Oscar understands. I remember Ollie Dunlap talked about the great Ray Leonard. We'll talk about Ray in a minute, too. And he said Ray Leonard understood what it meant to be champion. If it meant being someplace at 5 o'clock, Ray was there at 4:30. It meant shaking hands. It meant signing autographs. Ali, I'll never forget, and once again, we always talk about the Trust in God Sports and Entertainment Artifact Museum, which was inundated. We have in here autograph album by Oscar when he started singing. Of course, we have some pictures. I got a special cover here, the Pacquiao Mac Oscar De La Hoya fight. We have that autograph, that ring cover. We also have the first fight in Brooklyn, and Oscar and his core signed a Golden Boy hat. Oscar is a great, great fighter, and more importantly, Oscar is a tremendous human being. His candor, his honesty. Only Don King gives you conferences with the ambiance and flair and intellect. Great press conference yesterday. Reminded me of the old days. Just show up, get in, do something hot to eat. My good friend Harold Letterman was there and he was eating. And I said, Harold, did you save me anything? And Harold said, nope. Nope, Doc, nope. Good to always see him and have a lovely work with him. And yes, it was great to see, too, Larry Hazard, one of the great referees of all time, a Hall of Famer in boxing, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer in life, and Aaron Davis, the new head of the New Jersey State Boxing Commission. When he came to the podium, the first thing he did was give kudos, recognition, and honor to Larry Hazard, who made that commission a place of respectability and nurtured into one of the top boxing organizations in all of sports. And it was great to see Aaron and great to see him pay homage to Larry. Great to see Larry. Larry looked great, too. Larry has one of the great referees, great human beings, as Oscar does. But you can't say nothing about what Oscar does for the game. I mean, Oscar's put aside. I mean, him and Top Riker seem to be working together works, as Don King said. Oscar mentioned that in one of his press conferences, said that Don King was the first guy that brought you a monster card from head to bottom. I'll never forget being out of Vegas and Robert Lee Jr. And I see Robert Lee, the first fight, he's rushing to ringside. I said, Robert, where are you going? He said, it's the first fight. He said, it's the first fight, it's a championship fight, first fight on the card, a championship fight. And I would always be indebted to him. And Borough Sports was the first organization to honor me up at Jimmy's Bronx Cafe. What a tremendous night that was. You know, my whole family brought him in. Mario Ravenna was there. Bernie Williams, Doc Gooden, Art Russ Jr., iconic names. Rivera, Bernie, greatest closer in history of baseball. Bernie Williams, one of the greatest baseball. I'm still befuddled. Art Russ Jr., greatest sportscaster per se, the guy who started sports talk radio, my beloved mother, my sisters, Helen, Teresa, my brother James. I'm still befuddled by how Tino Martinez and Paul O'Neill get inducted into the monuments out there before Bernie Williams. Bernie Williams, born and bred Yankee, organization, batting championship, Golden Glove, born and bred Yankee, okay? And these guys are before him. I'm just befuddled. I mean, how do they jump in front of Bernie? Paul O'Neill never hit 300 in the National League. Never hit 300 in the National League. N-E-V-E-R. How do they get into Monument Park ahead of Bernie Williams? As Harry Weston would say, who should be joining us, who's sad and touching. How do you get to Bernie Williams? Sad and touching. You know, and you question these things. The Yankees were organization at one time that they would never, ever have a black player. Derek Jeter is the captain. Willie Randolph was the first African-American captain of the Yankees, co-captain with Ron Guidry. I thought that was a slap in the face. Well, he just couldn't be the captain outright. You had to share it with a pitcher. I thought that was a slap in the face. I could see if the pitcher was Bob Gibson, who one time was captain of the St. Louis Cardinals, or if it was a Koufax, but I didn't understand how Willie Randolph had to share the captainship with a pitcher or with anybody. Why couldn't he just be blatantly the first black captain? Derek Jeter is. And Derek Jeter is second to none. That's why he wears number two. It says apropos, second to none as a person, as a player. Everything Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything Mickey Mantle wasn't. A real-life American hero. The amazing thing about Jeter, you know that nobody ever kind of talks about Jeter being black. They don't seem to have – it's a subject you don't touch. They don't have a – mother's way. They don't seem to have a problem. I think a lot of Derek's complexion was a big factor him, too, being a captain there, Jonesy. You know, they don't talk about the hate mail that Derek was getting 2-3 years ago. Probably still gets redundantly because of his dating of women of the Caucasian race. But I think being the complexion that he is and being the fact, and I think a lot of this, too, was a factor in the election of Barack Obama. Now, Obama has a white mother. Derek has a white mother. I think that was a factor, Jonesy, and his selection as captain, and no question of selection, a factor in the fact that Obama became president of the United States. Jonesy? Your thoughts to that, Jones? Jump shot? Okay, I think Jump Shot went back in studio there. Okay. With Jump Shot in studio, let's go back to the recorder. Bernard Hopkins, Nassim Richardson, press conference, Waldorf Astoria.
Boxer, and I have to close on the biggest mission.
most dangerous mission. That's what he seeks out. Some people thought Cobra Love was the most dangerous. He's out to prove y'all that he's still special.
And he got a special man in the corner. Now, see, Rich, thank you, my brother.
There's always got to
the right guy. There's always the humble who'll say that. The fact that he ain't keep winning with you in the corner, I guess that's a coincidence?
Studio.
I'm here, Doc.
January 15th. Yeah, I had shot that question on you, and I had wanted your reply. I'll shoot it back to you in a minute. Bernard Hopkins, I started to interview yesterday. January 15th is his birthday, and it's a tremendous month, January. First of all, it's the month of my beloved mother. 21st is her birthday. The second is my daughter, Turquoise, my sweetheart daughter, Turquoise. The 25th is my grandson, my first grandson, Tariq. Bernard Hopkins is born the 15th, the same day as Dr. King. Statistic-wise, the next day is Roy Jones Jr.'s birthday. 2 days later, it's Buddy McGirt and Muhammad Ali. The 15th, if Hopkins goes to 3 days before, it's the 12th. It's Joe Frazier's birthday. And if you go 2 days before Joe Frazier's birthday, it's George Foreman's birthday. George Foreman, the oldest man ever to win the heavyweight champion of the world, at one time the oldest man to ever win a world championship. Joe Frazier, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, one of the greatest fighters in the history of mankind, and the first man to ever defeat Muhammad Ali. I thought Ali did pull that fight out. Bernard Hopkins, oldest man to win a world championship, the longest reigning middleweight champion ever, most defenses. Buddy McGirt, one of the great welterweights and one of the great trainers now. Roy Jones Jr., at one time, seen the best fighter pound for pound in the world. Muhammad Ali, no one needs to be said. And on the 31st, because the day before, Ben Martin, one of the great human beings and great detectives in the history of New York City Police Department and Transit Police of that. On the 31st is the birthday of the first ever African-American to win a world batting championship, first African-American to win the Rookie of the Year and the first African-American to win MVP of the National League and baseball, and also the first African-American ever to become commissioner, boxing commissioner in New York State. And that's other than Jack Roosevelt Robinson. Jackie Robinson, as we know, 1947, the first player ever, EVR ever, to win the Rookie of the Year. They only gave one Rookie of the Year award out, and that was the first time they ever did it. That shows you how great Jackie Robinson was in 1947, not only to win the Rookie of the Year, but the Rookie of the Year in all of baseball, okay, in all of baseball. The next year, Al Dark, another New York player, became the second player to win it, and the last time they had just one award. Jackie, in 1949, became the first African-American to win the batting championship and the MVP. And he did it the same year. And in 1947, he became the African-American to ever lead the league in stolen bases. And in the 20th century, Jackie Robinson was the last first baseman, I have to check if anybody else first baseman did it, to lead the league in stolen bases. The 31st of January, the month, that's a special month that Bernard Hopkins talks about, that is also Jackie Robinson's birthday. 1965, that year was Willie Mays won the MVP, becoming the first man ever to win the MVP 11 years apart. There's nobody that will ever play the game that will be remotely better than Willie Mays. It's astonishing when you look at the stats of the great Barry Lamar Bonds, his godson. What a great, great player Barry Bonds was. Over 200 walks in 1 year, 101 intentional walks, oldest man to win a batting championship, most home runs hit in one season by a left-handed batter, most home runs hit in one season by a batter, most home runs hit all time, only man to do 40, first man to do 40 in the National League, only man to steal over 500 bases and hit over 5 home runs. As great as Barry Bonds was, and Barry Bonds was great, 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 hey, wasn't close to being Willie Mays. I remember the great line in Joe Morgan's book. It said him and Pete Rose were kicking it one day, and Pete came up with a synopsis that he felt that he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, which I feel he is too. And Joe looked at him and said, hey, you know, you ain't no Willie Mays. SID Midday, before afternoon, before night, once again, where you get last first and right. Jump shot, I chatted up at you earlier, and sorry, I saw you were doing an editing, and I said, Willie Mays, the first black captain of the Yankees, but he was co-captain. They made him the captain with Ron Guidry. I thought that was sort of insulting that he couldn't be the first black captain outright. It would have been the fourth captain because the first captain was Lou Gehrig. Second captain was Don Mattingly. If I'm correct, Don Mattingly was the second captain of the Yankees. I think Babe Ruth was a short-time captain of the Yankees. Second captain of the Yankees was Thurman Munson. And then there was Don Mattingly. And I said so much of the selection of Barack Obama as President of the United States and Derek Jeter, that both guys have parents that are Caucasian. I think a lot of the selection of Obama as president and a lot of the selection of Derek Jeter, because I think Jeter is one guy that, unlike President Obama, Jeter is seen colorless. Nobody sees Jeter as black or white. They see, it says a lot about him, Derek Jeter as Derek Jeter. And Derek, once again, we talked about how Buck O'Neill, and see Harold has joined us, Buck Showalter and Joe Torre talk so much about how the way Derek carries himself, the class, the dignity. You've never heard about Derek Jeter even jaywalking. And same thing with the Williams sisters. You've never heard any negativity about those great sisters. Great, great plays. Nobody. I mean, they might as well call Wimbledon in the last decade or so the, not the Wimbledon tournament, but the tennis Williams tennis tournament. They were the women. They won it, 10 years in a row? 5 times Venus, 5 times Serena. But a lot of the allowability, the selection, or the, okay, we can go with this, of Barack Obama being picked president and Derek Jeter as captain of the Yankees, Derek because of his demeanor and his complexion, but is that both guys have parents, Jones, that are white. So the mindset is, you know what, you're not really putting a total black person in there. Jones?
Well, I hope in 2014, I just say I hope, and I know there's evidence probably to the contrary, that we, on certain things, certain areas, Doc, I hope that the person's character and their leadership ability, you know, is the deciding factor.
But I know that's in a perfect world. So, you know, I hope with people like Willie Randolph, who have demonstrated character and leadership, Derek Jeter, who has demonstrated character and leadership and effective play on the baseball field, that bar supersedes the decision to make him, whether it's captain or co-captain, that he's the leader of men in that dugout. And I like to believe that that's the, you know, that's the really the deciding factor where both of these men are concerned.
I mean, Willie, I mean, I just going back, my thing is, why couldn't he just been the captain outright? I mean, how many times do you pick a pitcher as a captain over everyday player? And, you know, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. I mean, to me, that smelled of the continuous racism that is inundated not only in baseball but in sports in general. I mean, we're looking at the Houston Astro manager fired the other day. I mean, you're telling me in his second year with a horrible team, he got dismissed. Where are the jobs for Dusty Baker and Willie Randolph? Dusty Baker won Manager of the Year twice. Manager of the Year after twice, considered the most popular manager in the game, a very good player as a player. Willie Randolph, okay, as a second baseman, never committed an error in postseason play of the Yankees. Vital part of the Yankees, okay, second winning manager in the history of the Mets, only manager I know ever that got fired both on the road and in the midst of a winning streak. And then if we look at baseball, I mean, where are the pitching coaching jobs for Bob Gibson? You know, how come nobody's ever asked Willie Mays to become a GM or Hank Aaron for another organization? You look at guys who go from other organizations. I mean, where are the jobs for Ferguson? How come nobody asked Ferguson Jenkins to be a pitching coach? Ferguson Jenkins, two-time Cy Young Award winner, won the Cy Young in both leagues. I mean, Ferguson Jenkins, Bob Gibson, Lou Al Jackson could be an outstanding pitching coach. I mean, what about batting coaches? Nobody asked Dave Winfield to become a batting coach? Jim Rice couldn't become a batting coach again? Rod Carew? Well, Rod was a batting coach for a little while, but for what Rod Carew did for his organization, there was no place for him as a GM or executive. Same thing with Willie. Same thing with Hank. Same thing with Ernie Banks. And, you know, these are not coincidences. These are concrete validations of the continuance. And it's always going to be. I read a story about the Johnson. They got Johnson. I mean, look at basketball. You mean to tell me nobody could have found a GM job for Oscar Palmer Robinson, Walt Clyde Frazier, Earl the Pearl Monroe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? I mean, we talk about it. It's stunning. This is stunning. When you talk about the greatest player to ever play, his name don't come up. But comes in and out. 20 years he played. 20 years he played, the all-time leading scorer, 5 times the MVP, most of them, 5 times world champion, won it with 2 different teams, the shot that nobody could block. And yet when you talk about the greatest player in basketball, his name doesn't even enter the conversation. Doesn't even enter the conversation. As Harold Weston would say, I'm gonna have to pin this thing, stand and touch him. How come nobody's ever asked Harold Weston to become a matchmaker outside of Madison Garden? Huh? I mean, how many guys can say they brought 4 world championships into fruition? And historically, Juan Laparte became the first ever featherweight champion of the world of Puerto Rican descent. Mark Badal, who everybody had on – didn't even think about Badal. Iran the Blade Barkley. The man beat Tommy Hearns twice. Knocked him out, and then I'll box him, and then there's Hector Camacho. Let me tell you something. Everybody today, Hector Camacho would have beat easily. When you talk about great, great fighters, when you make your numbers of 1 to 20, Hector, the Macho Man Camacho, is in that number. Okay? And if you look back at Hector's dossier, in his day, none of the elite fighters were asking to fight him. Where was Colonel Whitaker? Where was Melvin Taylor? Where was Julio Cesar Chavez? Okay, Harold told you. Chavez fight was made. No. Keep that Puerto Rican, okay, away from my Mexican until he gets slower. Am I telling the truth, Harold?
You're telling the truth all the way around. No question about it. They, you know, and Don King didn't want Julio Cesar Chavez to fight Camacho when Camacho was hot, and even Pernell Whitaker. Well, he beat up Pernell Whitaker in the gym, so that's the reason why Duba and them never won that fight. Because, you know, Duba liked to brag a lot, but he know he never wanted to make that fight with Camacho and Pernell Whitaker. He'd have beat the dog out of Pernell Whitaker. So that's the reason why they never wanted to even attempt to make that fight.
Good.
No, like you said, I mean, you're definitely right, Doc. In the top 20 of world greatest fighters, Camacho, the show will be in that line. There's no question about that. No question.
I told people this, Harold, and on his resume, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. It's SID Midday, before afternoon, before night. Once again, where you get last, first, right. I told everybody, Harold, on his resume, his dossier shows wins over Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. And I understand they were on the downhill side. Two things here. When he was on the downhill side, Hector Camacho still with the distance with Chavez, Trinidad, and De La Hoya. I told everybody, at their best and at his best, Hector Camacho could have and definitely had a chance to beat both Leonard and Duran when he was at his peak and they were at theirs. Harold?
Well, he beat Leonard already. But even when it was on the downside, Lennon never wanted to fight him, okay? Lennon knew about Camacho. And the thing with Lennon didn't want nothing to do with Camacho, because Camacho's hand speed was faster than his. And then he was a southpaw. That was the crazy part about it. He was a southpaw. So Lennon really avoided that situation, because Camacho called him out quite a few times. And Leonard didn't want to take that card. He just didn't want nothing to do with Camacho. But he finally took the bite after, you know, he knew he was on the downside. If he lost, it didn't make no difference. But Leonard would have never beat Camacho. Never, ever would have beat Camacho.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on. This is why I tell you, what you hit here, you will only hear here first, may not ever hear again. Two others, I am somebody. My panel is not the best. I'm gonna be honest about that. They're the absolute best. You hear things you will never hear again, or you first heard. You get, as they say, the inside straight scoop. Okay, and this is Harold Weston Jr. Okay, first and only African American. You people understand matchmaker at Madison Square. Do you know what Harold had to go through to become matchmaker at Madison Square Garden? Okay. Do you understand that? Do you understand that it was Harold Weston who taught the world how to beat Tommy Hearns? Okay. His was the blueprint, okay? Ray Leonard and Angelo Dundee called Harold at home. Hey, we wasn't going to fight Tommy until what, Harold?
Until they saw me fight him.
Okay, Harold, can you please continue, please, from there on? Please, thank you.
After they saw me fight him, then they, you know, Leonard and the great Angelo Dundee, they called me up and they said, hey, man, we just want to get some advice from you about what Tommy's hard punches and everything. And since you fought him, man, we saw that there is definitely a way of beating him. And then Leonard started asking me questions, you know, how hard he hits, you know, how fast is his hands. All right, and just start asking me how would it feel when you started going to the body, and Lenny said, man, you know, if I didn't see you fight him, I would never have fought Tommy Hearns. He said, no way in the world. He said, because Tommy was going through everybody. I mean, he was going through everyone. I mean, good fighters that were world champions at one time and everything. He was knocking everybody out. Tommy looked like a
beast. And before you came on, we had Nassim Richardson, and he said something. I mean, because you told me. Tommy, with that short hook to the solar plex, which is paralyzing, and Nassim, at another point, he said, Tommy could crack you with that right hand because it was so long, he didn't have to get close to hit it. It's like hitting you from across the ring, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Tommy, and, you know, it was so scary about it, too, Doc. Tommy could take a good punch, all right? Maybe not, he can't take it in the late rounds because when he gets tired, but in the early rounds, he can punch because you could saw when he fought Hagler, how him and Hagler went at the first two rounds. And he took some heck of a shot and stayed in there. But when he got tired, that's when, you know, he fell apart. But
You know, hold on, Harold. Hold on. You see, ladies and gentlemen, Did you hear what you just heard? Because the synopsis always was, if you, Tommy can't take, what did Harold tell you? He could take the punch. But like anybody else, when he got tired, he could take the punch. I mean, how, you told me how first five rounds of Tommy Hearns, you catching hell. Yeah, if you can weather the storm, you got to say. But you told me the first five, you're in and out with Tommy, right, Harold?
Yeah, it is hell. I mean, it is hell. I mean, that's the most, and I hate to say that, but the fact is that I've been there with Emil Griffin. I've been in there with Dick Tiger. I've been in there with Johnny Pearson. I've been in there with great fighters, Benitez, everybody. Tommy was the only fighter that I have ever been in there, and the first three and five rounds was like hell. And you got to fight your heart out to stay alive, okay? Because his whole attitude is try to kill you, get you out of there. And it's brutal. I mean, it's not easy. It's brutal. I mean, you're getting hit with punches that you feel. I told you. I mean, hit you with shots, man, that make a tear come out your eye. Okay. And when you start to have a tear come out your eye, that hurts. All right. That hurts. So I mean, it's a thing that Tommy Hearns, man, it's brutal. Ray will tell you. Hagler will tell you. Everybody will tell you. Tommy Hearns in first three, five rounds. You got hell on your hands.
You know, here's the humbleness of Harold Weston. And we have to tell you right now here, every Sunday from 6 to 7 on WHCR 90.3 FM, it's Man to Man with Harold Weston Jr. and your co-host Doc Stanley. Be there, man to man, the issues, the rumors, and the truths. Every Sunday, 6 to 7, WHCR 90.3 FM, Harold Weston Jr. Last week it was health. This week it will be about respect. And you got to get respect, Harold, because you're sitting here, but people don't understand that it was the eye injury with time in your career, but the late, and I'm looking at, once again, as we go to the Trust in God Sports and Depth Entertainment Artifacts Museum, I'm looking at a jacket that's given to me by my dear late friend, Emil Griffith, Emmanuel Stewart. The jacket. We would only fight ever down at the Jacob Javits Center, and me and Manuel were talking. He said, "How you doing, Mel?" He said, "Mel, you know, you need one of my jackets." And he turned to a guy and said, "Hey, man, Mel, give me information. Send Mel a jacket." And about 3-4 months later, I saw Mel. He said, "Hey, you get the jacket?" "I get a jacket." He said, "What? You get a jacket? You just send him the jacket?" He said, "Hey, take this number. Call him tomorrow." And a week later, I got a jacket and a shirt, Kronk Jim, Melvin Stanley, and what I'm doing with the jacket, I'm having all the guys that I can run into that he trained sign it, and now I'm also having other trainers. But Emmanuel Stewart told Harold Weston at the end of the fight that Tommy was done. If they had not stopped the fight right then and there, Harold Weston Jr. would not only would have beat Tommy Hearns, you'd have been the first man to beat Tommy Hearns. Am I right, Harold?
Oh, yeah, I had to stop Tommy in the next two rounds. There's no question about it. I mean, Tommy was dead. I mean, he was finished. And I knew it. I was just, God plays in mysterious ways. But you know what? It worked out. Just look at it. It worked out because, like, after 2 years later, I was hired as assistant matchmaker at Madison Square Garden. And if I was still been fighting, then I would never have got the greatest opportunity of my life. And for boxing in itself. So a lot of kids would never been champion of the world like the four guys you mentioned. The seven kids that I mentioned, they never made it in the sport if I kept on fighting. So, you know, God was in the ways, Mel. I mean, I this all was because of God's doing. And it was nothing wrong with
it.
He had planned for me.
It may be mysterious we said us, but it turned out mysterious for us, too. That great line, God in control. And God has a plan for those that he has in his hand. And that says a lot about you, how when you looked at the aspect like Oscar. People talk about Oscar. And people understand Golden Boy was founded on the premise of bringing the best fights to boxing. And he found jobs. I mean, Hopkins, Sugar Shane Mosley, Barrera, all these guys that got jobs. But you, and we've said this before, it's SID, midday, before afternoon and before night once again, where you get it last, first, and right. You know, you I just think you're the only guy that came out of boxing and moved into the venue you did the way you did. Other guys come in and lend their names for promotion. Other guys come in and they greet us at casinos. But you're the only guy that came in. And people understand, Madison, Don King, the temple of boxing. Madison Square Garden, the decline in boxing has been because of Madison Square Garden not being a pivotal figure. Madison Square Garden right now doesn't have a boxing department. That's absurd. This was the place to fight. And Harold Weston, when they cut the lights out with Harold as matchmaker, that's when the party was over. But people understand Madison Square Garden as a venue. This is where everybody wanted to put on their resume. Ray Leonard only fought there once. Tommy Hearns never fought there. Duran owned the place. Him, Harold, Benitez owned the place, fought there so much, and guys like that. But you don't understand what Harold Weston meant to the game. There's four guys who would have never been champions of the world. Never been champions of the world. Mark Vidal, he's not a world champion. Aaron Barkley, they threw Barkley on the scrap metal heap. Just threw him away. He came to you for help. Camacho, nobody would have took the time and patience or saw the jewel in Camacho. There's a very good chance. Maybe he would have got somebody, but not the nurturing and the publicity that he got. And Juan Laporte, who knows if Laporte ever would have got the shot at the title. I remember he had a great fight with Chavez, but he became the first ever Puerto Rican to win the featherweight champion of the world. And these are things, like you said, I remember Beyonce said one time, and I heard it before, you know, God is in control and God has a plan. And I've added the fact that God has a plan for those that he has in his hand. And it's a tremendous thing what you said about where you went and what you could do for others. We're talking about the service to others is rent your patriot room here in Earth. Muhammad Ali, life's most persistent, most urgent question is what are you doing for others? Jackie, that's Dr. Luther King. Jackie Robinson, a life is not important except for the impact it has on another life. Roberto Clemente, you know, when you have a chance to help somebody and you don't do it, you're wasting your time here on Earth. And the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Doc Stanley, SID, midday, where you get it before, where you get afternoon, before night, and once again, first, last. And like Jumpshot, Joni, Double Bow, Howard Weston Jr., Howard, Bernard Hopkins, Kovalev, November 8th in Atlantic City. A lot of people think that Bernard May has bitten off more than he can chew. I'm saying Bernard is shrewd. Bernard knows what he's doing. How do you like this fight? Is this a win for Bernard, or is this the end of Bernard Hopkins?
I mean, Doc, let's look at the real deal, all right? What could ever happen to Bernard in any fight if he takes it, all right? He's 50 years old, so whatever happens, if he wins or lose, I mean, the doors are going to close. If he loses, the doors are closed, but we're not going to go crazy. Oh, this is a big upset. It's not an upset. Bernard's 50 years old, so we'll use that 50-year-old number to say that's the reason why he lost. If he wins, then you say, oh, God, Bernard's a great fighter. He's still at 50, still fighting. When is he going to retire? So, I mean, we can go back and forth then. But Bernard ain't got nothing to worry about, Doc, because there's no talent out there, okay? There's no talent out there. There's nobody as smart as Bernard right there out there. And Bernard ain't the smartest fighter in the world. That's the crazy part about it. I know guys that were with Bernard from one post to the other post. But the fact is that he's took that old talent and knowledge of things that he has learned from the old crew back in the day and took ideas that I have given him and everything and put it into that whole artillery he's got. And he's a great fighter today because of that knowledge. And I give Bernard big stars on that. I think that he's a smart guy that listened to people, took their advice, and he added into his artillery, and now he's where he's at. And he's not been hurt yet. And what can you do? Hello? Oh, yes. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Doc? Al?
Yeah.
I don't hear you. I don't hear Doc. I think we lost Doc for a minute.
Oh, okay.
So your point, you make a valid point with, Bernard Hopkins. I mean, you're right. The talent base is not what it was some years ago, at all classes, I would think. Maybe you can elaborate on that. From the middleweight, from the welterweight, certainly at the heavyweight. I mean, Klitschko has been a champion for almost a decade.
Right. Let's think about that. I mean, here's a man, the heavyweight champion, I mean, from, you know, of the world, him and his brother, well, his brother's not around no more. But my point is that for a decade, okay, and he's not that great. I mean, he's all right, but he's not that great.
Yeah.
But the talent is so low in the heavyweight division, there's not even a threat out there. That's the crazy
right.
part.
You're right. I mean, there was a time when boxing was driven by the heavyweight, and then maybe the middleweight. Al? Stop. Okay, we're having some technical difficulties here, but we shall resume. Let's be patient with us. You're listening to SID, Sports in Depth, with the legendary Melvin Dot Stanley, Harold Weston Jr., and myself, Greg Jones Sr., a.k.a. Jump Shot Jonesy. Bear with us, some technical difficulties, but we shall resume. 1:38 p.m. on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, September 3rd. A little more than 24 hours from the debut of the NFL, Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks tomorrow evening. A lot going on, pennant races, and baseball. Bo Porter gets relieved of his duties as the Houston Astros manager, the first manager this year to be let go. Mets and Yankees, the Yankees trying to hold on to contention with the wild card. A lot going on in the world of sports.
They left that Jonesy jump shot there under the controls. We also have here without jump
Hello?
Shot. Yeah, we also. Oh, calm down, Jesse, calm down. Calm down.
No, I just said hello.
You know what's funny? Lady A. At the press conference yesterday, Lady A was there, jump shot. So she said, Dave, I got her early. She said, but Dusty was already here. I said, well, Dusty left last night. And
of course, I had a king suite up there.
I said, Dusty left last night. I said, Dusty always comes to every press conference like he's going to be the second fight on the card. You know what I mean? He's here right early.
No, but not second fight, main event. Come on, man, not good.
Well, Dusty, I thought you'd be a little more humble than that, Dusty. Calm down.
No, Dusty. I don't even know how to spell the word humble.
Dusty, you brought a point in tremendous
yeah.
first conference. Reminded me so much of the old days. You walked up, you signed in something hot deep. But a lot of people, unbeknowing, weren't aware that Oscar is having this fight on HBO. They had been a rip. They've seen the made-up as well as the scene he's made up with also with Bob Ramsey. But you brought a point in, there was a lot of talk, too, yesterday of why this fight was not at the Barclays Center. And it seems that Oscar is expanding his horizon in the sense of taking a fight to Atlantic City and not at the Barclays Center, and a fight that's not on Showtime. But see, usually it's a Showtime fight, and usually it's the Barclays Center. This time it's an HBO fight in Atlantic City, Dusty.
Yeah, because Oscar told me, as well as he told you guys, he says, I'm splitting the halves. There are times we're going to do an HBO, which has been my home, and then we're going to touch bases with Showtime. I mean, that's a smart business move. The only thing that I was surprised, and I spoke to Kathy Duva. And I'm saying, we were supposed to have this fight. I don't think she liked it. We were supposed to have this fight at the freaking Barclays, man. Why in freaking Boardwalk Hall? Oh, because we lobbied. We lobbied hard and fast, and we wanted it over there. Besides, Bernard said this is where my career started, and I wanted to finish my career.
Dusty, you raise a tremendous point. A tremendous point because finish my career. Harold Weston worked with him in his second fight because he lost his first fight as a light heavyweight. And finish my career, and Harold said something, too. At 50 years old, If he loses the fight, he's finished. He's in a catch-22 position. If he wins, wow, amazing. If he loses, it's finished. And Lady A said, too, Lady A, this also was special for early part, the Boxing with Lady Live from the Walls of Story. Lady A said, too, she can't see him. She likes the Russian. And you said something that's so profound right now, is that he started his career, he finished career. If he loses this fight, is this the end of his career? Is this like his psychic? Is this just
okay.
Roberta Hopkins?
Okay, Doc, let me throw a bomb at you and a hand grenade at you. I think Hopkins is going to beat Kovalev. He's playing a mind game. If you remember correctly, he said after he beat Shevanov, I got my passport, I got my train tickets, I'm going to Canada, and Adonis Stevens, you're next. All quiet on the Western Front. And everybody figured, well, he's going after the easy guy, and he's afraid of the great, of the supposedly white hope of the light heavies, Kovalev. All of a sudden, he stops at midstream. He says, later. Kovalev, I got you. You're next. Now, that wakes on this man's mind. And my mind says, man, I'm supposed to be the most feared dude, and this old bag is challenging me. So now, what is Kovalev thinking? What does he see? Max Melly saw something in Joe Lewis? Hopkins saw something in Kovalev? Or, like you said, he wants to finish his career in Boardwalk Hall, and if he loses, that's a swan song. I don't think he's going to lose, Doc. I mean, something in my gut is telling me this guy
I'm with you on this. And you know how sometimes maybe the coffee I had this morning, I didn't even have none. But I'm with you on this. I don't see Bernard taking a fight that he feels he can't win. Nassim said something that was so profound in the early part of the show. Firemen, and you were a fireman, one of the great firemen in the industry, Lieutenant, that firemen run from fight. We run from fights. Firemen run into fights.
Into
Bernard's running into this. And let me understand, Bernard is no idiot.
That's, you hit it on the head, man, with a freaking sledgehammer. He's no idiot. You know, Bernard has something like, oh, God, I was making some notes here because I'm writing the story on it just now. He's had, I think, 36 knockouts. Kovalev has had all of 25 fights. Kovalev has knocked out the last four or five guys. Who did he knock out?
That's it. You bring up a stat that I always look at, too. Here's a guy, with more knockouts then his opponent has fights, Dusty.
Exactly.
That's a telling stat, Dusty.
Right, exactly. And the only one that of note that Sergey beat was a guy, Caparelli, whatever his freaking name is, and then the Colombian, Campobello. But who else? These guys were unknowns from the European cemetery, and that made him look good. I mean, he fights his Caparello, a lewd development. Caparello looked good the first time when he stayed undefeated, but here Sergey sinks his right hand wrist deep into his gut, and the guy quits. So what kind of an opposition is that? And on top of that, by some fluke, this dude hits Sergey and drops him. So, I mean, what kind of opposition has he had? And he's gone out with the belief that he's the baddest man at 175 pounds? No, man, you met your master now, my friend. I would be surprised if Hopkins loses. I'm not looking for a knockout because Hopkins does not knock you out physically. He knocks you out mentally. And that's...
But you know what, Dusty? You know what could happen here? This could be a knockout in the sense that the psychological factor, and we know this. What thing about Bernard Hopkins? Bernard Hopkins, Ray Leonard, Evander Holyfield, they always come in shape, okay? So this could be a fight. As we move into rounds 8 and 9, not only is this guy physically spent, he's psychologically spent, and, Bernard could say, you know what, I got to go home now. Boom. So I'm saying from the combination of the mental and the physical fatigue, if there is a knockout, it's a running dusty that we're talking, but the guy mentioning the knockout could be D-Hop the Alien.
Exactly. And the thing is, too, that you got to look at the fact that Bernard, the last guy he fought, a young guy, Shimonov, when did he knock him down?
Hey, Dusty, hold on, Dusty. Dusty,
yeah.
Everybody that Bernard fights now is a young guy.
The young guy. But when did Bernard knock him down? He knocked him down in the 11th round. That means that Bernard, I mean, played and toyed and like a mouse playing with a cat playing with a mouse and break his jaw and break his tail and this and the other, and they say, okay, it's time for me to eat you. Bam! That right hand was one of the most accurate, solid right hand shots that he hit that dude with. And I said to myself, man, if Bernard had been 5 years younger, this dude would be out listening to the birds for the count of 10, because that was a shot.
You know,
shot.
It's funny you said that. Nassim was talking about a fight where the other guy was gone. He was spent. He said, but I can't tell Bernard to go out there and finish him because at this age, he can't do it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dusty.
That's what he was telling me. He says, we don't go out there for knockouts. We go out there to wear and tear. And if at the end, towards the end of the fight, they said, nah, you know, it's time for you to put him away. You want to go home early. Oh, that Nazim had me rolling on the floor. The guy's a comedian. You don't know how funny he is. What were the things that he said? But we don't go for the knockout. We go for the win. And if it goes the distance, I mean, hey, Bernard can go the distance 20 times. These young poops can't do it. And that's what I'm saying. We don't go for the knockout. We go for the win. The win is more important.
The W, baby.
Yeah.
Your synopsis now, you made a good point, Harold. If Bernard wins, wow. If he loses, so what? He's 50 years old. Harold?
Yeah. I mean,
you're right. Mm-hmm.
I think Bernard, fighting at 50 years old, you don't watch your welcome. And, I mean, Bernard is not the greatest attraction to watch fighting. I mean, so basically nobody really cares about it. But like I said, the talent is not out there for him to worry about anybody. He shouldn't
right.
even have no problem with this kid he's fighting. I mean, Bernard's just going to outsmart him. The kid is just one-dimensional, and that's where you're going
Absolutely.
With it. Absolutely. He's already figured that whole situation out. And Bernard don't let you fight your fight. I mean, if you can't fight your fight, you can't beat Bernard Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. And I know this kid ain't going to be able to fight his fight because he's leery about Bernard. And
there
Bernard is leery about him because this is just another walk in the park for Bernard. You know, that's all it is. They don't build the kid up.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. You heard it right here, Sports in Depth, Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., Dusty, eighth round, Lois Jr. You heard it here first, Sports in Depth. Well, we not only bring Sports in Depth, but the world in depth. You heard it here first. Bernard Hopkins, okay, when the slope's clear, we'll be heading to Canada to continue the fight. The fight is November 8th in Atlantic City. Next week, we've got Mayweather against Madonna. But you know what, gentlemen, what got me? I saw a press release the other day. The Matador is fighting again. And also we've got the Nigerian Nightmare on a card out in, I think, Oklahoma City. The Nigerian Nightmare. In fact, I sent it to you. Check your emails, but he's fighting. It's a car out in Lagos. Out in
Mallorca fighting again in the Nigerian Nightmare.
Yeah. I got to review. I got to look that sentry. It's a card out in the Midwest. I think Oklahoma City. The Mallorca, the Nightmare, Nigerian Nightmare, and also. We got coming this weekend, the Broner fight. What was interesting on that Broner fight, nobody's talking about is the Matusse's on that card. He's a name that got buried. You thought that as hot as he was, and even with that big win that Danny Garcia had against him, and yesterday a name threw into, and you with Dusty, a name threw into the mix, and I've heard that, I was saying the other day, that he could wind up fighting maybe both Pacquiao and Mayweather, but Danny Garcia, but Oscar said, you know, that as far as Alvarez is concerned, there's names, there's Kirkland, and as Jay Blade, Gilberto Ortiz from the Latin side of working on boxing, Megan B. working Black Predation Breeder Brother, said that they're talking about now of Danny Garcia and Pacquiao down the line after Pacquiao's fight against Algeria in Dubai. But what the thing that Oscar said yesterday was the options out there for Alvarez. What he mentioned and what stuck me was Golden Boy, Garcia, Pacquiao, and he said Mayweather, Pacquiao. So maybe that's still not out the window. But the big thing is what you said, too. And what I liked about Oscar, too, was his sensitivity. When Tim Smith, the great boxing writer, probably the best of this era, he said, you know, in making the fight with HBO, he had to also be concerned about the sensitivity, and he showed the respect and courtesy to Showtime. And then what you said, Dusty, business-wise, you know what I mean? Okay, if I can flank Randy Moss to the left and Welker to the right, if I can hand off to Dusty in the backfield and to Harold Weston, if I can pass to Jumpside Jonesy and Michael Jordan, I got more options and a bigger avenue. And you got to salute because there was concerns about Oscar, and they act like Oscar's the only guy that ever did cocaine. They act like Oscar's the only guy that ever went to rehab, the only guy that ever crossed. No, come on. You know,
well,
they're trying to build up
the garbage and all that. But you see, you threw me a left hook here somewhere because they're talking about Danny and Pacquiao. But did you read the soundbite that after Pacquiao finishes with Chris Algieri, they agreed to a fifth with Marquez? So where does Danny Garcia come in? So I mean,
what's amazing here, Dusty? The thing here too, and Jumpshot Jones is back with us. We got about good 5 minutes. You know what's amazing here too, and the big talk yesterday was the reluctance to keep talking to fight anybody. I mean, everybody doesn't want to fight Triple G.
Yeah, Kathy Duva told me he hasn't signed. He hasn't signed for that Russian fighter. He's holding back the Russian fighter signed, but he hasn't signed. What the hell is that?
I mean. Danny Jenkins called them out, and you know, you would think that'd be a perfect fight. If you don't want to fight Triple G, here's your way to back out easily. Okay, I'll fight Danny Jacobs. It's an outstanding fight for the Barclays Center. It's an outstanding fight for Brooklyn. Okay, it's not a pay-per-view fight, but it's a good little fight. But you know, Jay Chopper, here's a kid I remember on the undercard, the first undercard of the Cotto fight he ever had here, with that classic line, "0-0." And all the knockouts in the world, but gentlemen, for all reality, he's not showing the heart of a champion.
Well, Doc, let me tell you something. You know, he quoted, like I told you this last week, quoted a saying, this is the 1.5 is the most money I made in the three or four fight defenses. Now, what the hell is he crayfishing for? He's fighting some Russian southpaw unknown. He's making 1.5 under Jay-Z, supposedly. And then he hasn't even made any move towards anybody else, and he's reluctant to sign this? Is he out of his mind?
Well,
he can go after Danny Jacobs, man.
That's right. That's a tremendous point, Dusty. You're matchmaking now, Dusty. You're matchmaking now. Calm down. But you got to wonder if there's Kool-Aid running through his veins. And another thing, you know, Hal, you said something the other day, and we want to dovetail on it. You know, how reports come through, too. It's amazing when they show the death of a minority, it's always a picture of him with his hat on backwards, you know what I mean, or holding a peace sign instead of a nice suit or his college graduate picture. And Lady A brought up something real quick yesterday. She said, you know, this Jermaine Taylor thing was, people understand, cousin was there as an intruder, okay? Okay, so the cousin came there. He might have been a cousin, but the cousin actually, from all intents and purposes, was in there robbing and looting.
Yeah.
And all you have to know is that
Taylor grabbed his gun and he came down the stair, whatever the hell it was. Yeah, in self-defense.
Because what happened is Taylor, he made bail. His fight is going to continue. And you know, it's amazing how the stories are always portray. You know, black always attack and get back. White, it's always all right. No need to fight. General, hold on just a second. Mary Hardy, she has something to say before we close out here. Tremendous point there, Dusty. It's simply amazing. The way the story came out, Jermaine Taylor shot his cousin. And I mean, it's just, but as it turns out, it's a situation that, you know, it reminds me of that classic line by the late, great Richard Pryor, who commonly said, he said, my darling called me a dog just because I sold her TV, you know what I mean?
Any Caucasian protecting his home, uses his shotgun is justifiable. Remember that.
I mean, you know, when I said to Dusty, I remember that great line that when DeBibio shot Robinson, one of my fellow police officers, and I said, you know, in America, any white man could run down any major street in America with a gun in his hand and his field jacket on, and somebody say, there goes a cop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's said and touched. Gentlemen, Larry Hardesty has this to say. Larry, please.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
And Marvin Gaye has this to say before we go on our way. Jump Shot Jonesy, great jump shot, Jonesy, double barrel, Howard Weston Jr., Jesse, H. Brown, but X Jr.
Can I go back to my medication, please?
What that's?
Can I go back to my medication, please?
Dusty, hey, listen, Dusty, not only that, and remember, put the Cavassier down. Marvin Gaye has this to say before we go on our way. SID Midday. Before afternoon, before tonight, once again, where you get it first, last, and right. God bless you all. Doc Sandy, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Now, Mr. Gay, we'll have this
God
to say as we say.
Take care.
Enjoy the rest of the day.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time when the world won't be singing. When the world won't be singing. Flowers won't grow. Flowers won't grow. No. Bells won't be ringing. No bells won't be ringing. Who really cares? Who really cares? Who's willing to try? Who is willing to try? To save a world. To save a world. That's destined to die. That is destined to die. When I look at the world. When I look at the world. Fills me with sorrow. It fills me with sorrow. Little children today. Children today. Really gonna suffer tomorrow. Really suffer tomorrow. Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Such a bad way to live. Such a bad way to live. Oh, who is to blame? Who is to blame? We can't stop living. When we can't stop living. Oh, oh. Live. Live.
Live for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children.
Any last thoughts before we close it out altogether?
A lot going on, Doc. It's a good time of year with the NFL getting ready to start tomorrow. Looking forward to that. The Yankees are still in some playoff contention, so, you know, that's good for New York. Wow, if we could just – I mean, you almost wish Derek Jeter can come back for one more year. You know, he's just been such a such a breath of fresh air to the sport and to the city and to the game, you know, and to see his career winding down, you know, it's kind of bittersweet. And, you know, just excited about, you know, the upcoming weekend. You know, look forward to it. And
you know, it's amazing,
football season started.
It's amazing you mentioned about you. It's amazing to look at it. 20 years, and look at the accomplishments, the profound effect he's had on the game. 20 years as the starting shortstop.
Profound is the right word, Doc. Profound is the absolute right word.
What's that,
Joe? I mean, you don't even this guy. Nothing, you know, no scandal, nothing drug related, no domestic violence, no womanizing. I mean,
he's just run it the right way, all the way, for a long time. You bring up a tremendous point about the womanizing, because here's a guy known as a ladies' man. You know, and some of the most profound and beautiful ladies in the world. Known as a ladies' man, quietly was set up for matrimony a couple of years ago and quietly slid out of that. Just like the Williams sisters, you never heard about jaywalking or anything. But the profound effect he's had on the game, and Joe Torre and Buck Showalter both talked about, here's a guy, shortstop on the Yankees, captain of the Yankees, one of the greatest players in baseball, in New York Fishbowl, and you never hear anything negative about him, man. That says a lot about him as a person and a lot about as his parents. I remember his first year in the league, up in Harlem with the greatest sportscaster, African-American-wise, Larry Hardesty, and the great John Starks, greatest dunk in the history of New York City basketball, pro-wise, for the Knicks. But it is just 20 years at shortstop. Most hits ever by a right-handed batter in history of the league, and second only to Hank Aaron in the history of baseball. Okay, Gold Glove, 5-time world champion. He just, the just to play 20 years at shortstop. I think only Willie Mays is the only guy that plays his whole 22 years defined at his position at shortstop. Kyle Ripken eventually went over to third base. So many of the guys went over to first base. But DiMaggio, too, played 20 years. DiMaggio only played 13. Mantle played 17. Most games played at the Yankees, most hits at the Yankees, most doubles at the Yankees. Great all-star player. A great, great player. Football season starts this week. Amazing. Kickoff tomorrow in the NFL. And then here in New York, we get back-to-back days. The Jets open up on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. Giants against the Detroit Lions. How do you see this opening game? Victor Cruz supposedly made the comment that this first game against Detroit is huge. Must win for the Giants first game. Must win for the Jets first game against the Oakland Raiders. Jonesy, synopsis on this, please.
Yeah, I think Victor's right. I think how fast the Giants get off is going to be critical to how well they'll do this season. If the Giants get off to a slow start in the division that they're in, I think it's going to be tough trying to bounce back. Having to play Philadelphia twice, the Cowboys twice, the Redskins twice, you know, the pressure, in order to put pressure on the Eagles, they're going to have to get off to a fast start. Kudos, though, of Doc, since we are talking about the Lions, to Jim Caldwell. You know, it's still almost amazing, or to use your word, profound, that in 2014, the National Football League needs a Rooney Rule for minority candidates to be considered for a head coaching, to be interviewed for head coaching positions throughout the league. They need to put a rule in place to facilitate this, but Jim Caldwell, through this process, was able to get a second opportunity to be a head coach in this league. So kudos to him. And let's see, and he's got a good shot there with the Lions. You know, I know Green Bay is the talk of the NFC North, but you never know. You know, a break here, an injury here, and you know, he's in a tough division with the Bears, the Packers, and the Vikings, but you never know, and I wish him well. I hope he does well. I know he is, I believe there are now four minority coaches in the NFL today. So, you know, it's better than it was, but there's still more ground to cover.
You know, Jonesy, you're always on the case, and, you know, we're going to make you also Greg Jumpshot Jonesy, a.k.a. Mr. CR, Dr. CR, Dr. Civil Rights. Man, you're always on top of those issues, which we are so proud of you for and what you bring here to the table. You know, we knew you were going to bring class and intellect and integrity, but your constant awareness, and, you know, you now you're also Jumpshot Jonesy, a.k.a. Dr. CR, Civil Rights, always on top of things, CR, and that's, we like that. And I said this before, you people out there, you know, sports in depth, with the intellect of my posse, it's sports today and historically, but with the intellect, their savvy, and their knowledge of society and the world, sports in depth is too, so often, the world in depth. And this is one of the people who've added that, the world I am somebody, and some people don't understand that you have to surround yourself with the right people. Like in life, the great line, God gives you a friend, you choose your friend. Everybody can't be your friend because your friends represent you. But when I tell you about these people, when I send them out to affairs, I'm represented the best I can, both intellectually, spiritually, and from appearance-wise, too. I mean, they are somebody's. I've so often said, that I've come to the realization that my panel is not the best. No, they're not the best. They're the absolute best. Jumpshot, Greg Jumpshot Jonesy, a.k.a. the CR, Dusty, 8th round, X Brown Jr., Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., Nate B. Berger, Baseball, Lewis, the Hoopster Heart, G.W. Mike, the Cisco Kid. They're all here, and we miss so profoundly. The late Malcolm Sell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Lulu Kelko, a.k.a. Rooney. With that, we're going to close out. We'll be back tonight, though. SID Late Night. Jones, hope you can be with us in studio. SID Late Night, where you get it last, where you get it first, where you get it right. We'll be kicking off about 1:30, a late night presentation. But right now, we just gave you SID Midday, afternoon and before night, where you get it last, first, and right. Greg Jumpside, Jonesy Colson were here with me. We had Dusty H. Red Brown, Harold Weston Jr. We'll be back tonight. Actually, it'll be tomorrow. SID Late Night. Doc Stanley, Sports Internet, Block Talk Radio, the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Larry Hardesty said it so apropos. Live your life today. Have to stand before God tomorrow. And I like a lot of sayings that I get on Black Trending. And one was maybe, as I quote and say, a real woman can handle and go through anything, but a real man would not allow her. Another great saying was, when did things become what the lady wants? It's always what we want. And then one I really like so much, don't put your key of happiness in somebody else's pocket. Doc Stanley, Jump Shot Jones. We'll see you later on tonight. That's tomorrow. Trust in God. Harry Bonet will take us away. Harry, we got to go.
Running used to be the way I passed my time.
Earth, Wind & Song, Earth, Wind & Song, Earth, Wind & Fire Song. One that,
to see what I could
find. Introduce me to him. Is it going? We gotta go. Earth, Wind & Fire. Where have all the flowers gone?
Some company.
Ooh.
try to tell myself that it was just a game. I'd run again to try and ease that lonely pain. No matter where I traveled, there I'd be, stuck in those walls of skin called me. And I was just a running to find something true. And I'd just be running with nothing to prove. And I kept on running and had nothing to show. They all saw me running and said, there he goes. You caught my eye one day while I was on a run. How you made me feel my life had just begun. Oh, I'd seen the last of all my roaming days. 'Cause I knew from you I'd never run away. Now you've got me running to get home to you. And my heart keeps running when I think of things you do. And I won't be running to no one else no more. They all see me running and say that's love for sure. Yeah. I'm not hesitating, no. As soon as work is done, yeah. Fast that my leg can carry me. Life ain't complicated, oh no, you got only one heart, one joy, one place to be. Now I'm watching people running all around, chasing after things that'll just run them down. Life is so much better if they change their ways. I wish I could tell them, but you know I can't stay.